Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
A ceasefire between Israel and Hamas gets underway as all eyes turn to the release of hostages. Plus, Elon Musk calls strikes against Tesla's operations in Sweden insane. And why toys won't be flying off the shelves on this Black Friday.
Demand has really cooled, a shift from spending on goods during the pandemic when people were stuck at home to spending on services. So that's been a challenge for the toy industry. It's been a challenge for a lot of retailers, and it's just something that we've seen headed into the holiday season.
It's Friday, November 24th. I'm Kate Bullivant for The Wall Street Journal. And here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. We begin in the Gaza Strip, where a temporary ceasefire between Israel and Hamas has started nearly 7 weeks into the war. The truce in the fighting, which started at 7 a.m. local time, is set to last for 4 days and has so far held. I spoke to Middle East correspondent Stephen Kalin earlier, who began by telling me how aid has begun flowing into the enclave.
The aid that's coming in is vital. It's life-saving. It's absolutely crucial. I've heard various figures, but I think it's fair to say that around 10% of Gaza's needs have gotten in the past 6 weeks since the fighting started. We've reported on a shortage of fuel, which has led to the shutdown of electricity, power generation. That has obviously affected vital institutions like hospitals. It also at a certain point led to the collapse of the communication system because the phone company couldn't keep powering basic services. And then, of course, food and water are absolutely essential and have been running extremely low across the strip. So it's a significant amount of aid and compared to what's been allowed in the past 6 weeks, but it's still its bare minimum for what Gaza needs. In normal times, there's somewhere between 400 and 600 trucks a day entering Gaza between aid and commercial supplies. Most days it's been zero or in the single or low double digits. And so this potentially is ramping it back up to a couple of hundred, which would help alleviate some of the need.
Okay, and what do we know about the hostages held in Gaza? They are part of this deal too, right?
So the plan, the deal that's been agreed, calls for the release of 50 hostages held in Gaza over the course of 4 days. So we're expecting of around 12 or 13 people per day. That it depends a little bit on keeping families together. So the women and children are going to be released in this initial phase, but we're expecting the first batch of 13 to happen around 4 p.m. local time. It's unclear how long that's going to take or exactly what route they will take. There should be an involvement of the Red Cross to help guide them from the location that they're handed over by Hamas to the Israeli side that may go through Egypt at a certain point. And after that begins, or maybe after it ends, there will be a release of something around 40 Palestinian women and children held in prisons in Israel.
Do we have any idea of what state they're in? It's been a while since hostages were last released. And while traumatized, they have spoke of being well treated while being held.
Yeah, it's really hard to know what their condition will be exactly. Hamas has said that they're treating them as guests and taking care of them. Obviously, they're being held in what we expect they were would have been held underground, likely. Hamas has a network of tunnels under Gaza that their fighters and commanders use. We anticipate that, and I think the Israelis have said that they believe the hostages are being held there. It's one of probably the safest places in Gaza. So to protect them from bombardment, keep them alive, but still it's unclear the extent to which they've been able to receive medical care. There was obviously, when they were taken, many of them were injured. So we anticipate that they will go first to hospitals in Israel to receive care and then likely be questioned and interrogated by the Israeli security forces to learn more about exactly what happened to them, where they were held.
Okay, lots to watch out for today and not least in the coming days too. Stephen, thank you so much for updating us.
Happy to be with you.
Now to China, which has provided the World Health Organization with data about a pneumonia outbreak among children in the country. Journal reporter Chen Han Wong says it comes after the organization made an unusual public request for the information.
There are doubts about the accuracy of Chinese data on public health issues. So the World Health Organization decided to make public this request as a way to put pressure on Beijing to be more forthcoming. So China actually responded quite quickly. The request was issued on Wednesday by WHO, and China responded by arranging a teleconference with the WHO on Thursday to provide the requested data. And as we can tell from WHO's public statement, they got the information they wanted from China.
The WHO said the Chinese data revealed that known pathogens are behind the clusters and that the surge in respiratory illnesses was to be expected following years of lockdown. Elon Musk is once again at odds with unions, calling strikes at Tesla workshops in Sweden, quote, insane. The five-week strike across eight Tesla workplaces is being led by the powerful trade union IF Metall and marks the first time workers at the EV maker have gone on strike. Automotive reporter Bill Boston says Musk's frustration particularly pertains to so-called sympathy strikes by other Swedish workers, including the postal services delivering license plates to new Tesla cars.
He has made his rejection of workers' rights to organize and collectively negotiate their wages, benefits, working conditions well known over the years. What is surprising is why he's commenting now. Clearly, he is unnerved by the Swedish strikes because they are hitting one of Tesla's biggest markets in Europe, and they threaten to spread.
And as Bill explains, the Swedish strikes are significant because they could have global repercussions.
Because most workers in Sweden are organized. Tesla is now confronting the European system of unionization, of collective bargaining, which enjoys just much broader public support here, political support, than unions do in the United States. The other reason this is significant for American workers is that this would light a spark that would likely spread to other countries in Europe, especially Germany, where they have around 11,000 employees at their big factory, and possibly have an impact on the discussions that are happening in the United States now, where the UAW, after having won big gains in its recent battles with big automakers, now have set their sights on Tesla and want to organize the Tesla plants.
And there are signs that the American dream, the idea that anyone who works hard can get ahead, regardless of their background, has slipped out of reach in the minds of many Americans. Only 36% of voters in a new Wall Street Journal NORC survey said the American dream still holds true. That's substantially fewer than the 53% who said so in 2012. It's the latest evidence that Americans across the political spectrum are feeling economically fragile and uncertain that the ladder to higher living standards remains sturdy. Half of voters in the new poll said that life in the US is worse than it was 50 years ago, compared with just 30% saying it had gotten better. Coming up, is it make or break for toy makers this holiday season as consumers pull back on spending? That story and more after the break.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. Robert Half is here to help. Our recruiting professionals utilize our proprietary AI to connect businesses with highly skilled talent. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
It's Black Friday, and while this is usually a fun day of shopping for many, it's pretty much make or break for the toy industry. After a bad year, the industry was pinning their hopes on the next few crucial months for retailers, but it seems customers won't be ripping dolls and board games off the shelves. Instead, the likes of Mattel, Hasbro, and Lego are gearing up for a soft holiday season, with sales expected to slow as customers pull back on spending. So how are toy makers navigating these choppy waters? WSJ reporters Ben Glickman and Harriet Torrey join us to help answer this question. But Harriet, first of all, can you tell us a bit more about the challenges that toy makers are facing at the moment?
Yeah, toy makers have had a bit of a difficult year. And there are a few things going on. But one thing that we have seen over the past couple of years is that during the pandemic, demand for toys was through the roof. People were stuck at home. They needed to keep their families and their kids entertained. So demand for things like board games and physical toys was extremely strong. And what we've seen now is that demand has really cooled, a shift from spending on goods during the pandemic when people were stuck at home to spending on services. Now people can get out and about more. They're just starting to really prioritize things like travel, dining out, entertainment, those types of spending outlays as opposed to, you know, buying another board game. So that's been a challenge for the toy industry. It's been a challenge for a lot of retailers, and it's just something that we've seen headed into the holiday season.
And Ben, it's not just consumer spending that is affecting toy sales. I know how our reporting in recent years has shown the impact of online entertainment. How are toy companies addressing that?
Well, it's an interesting question. A lot of them are seeing it as a new avenue to drum up interest for their toys. Obviously, this year was a huge phenomenon with the Barbie movie. And in the last print, the last quarterly results from Mattel, we saw that Barbie sales were doing really well. Definitely digital and entertainment and movies and TV and those kinds of avenues are definitely a way that toy makers are looking to sell toys and get more interest. On the other hand, some of their digital products tend to do very well. Hasbro, in its recent results, reported that its Baldur's Gate 3 video game had really strong sales as well. So the digital products are definitely another offering that toy companies are bringing to the table, but it's also an avenue that they're trying to use to sort of sell their existing toys, drum up demand for their existing brands.
So it's not going to be a scenario where we're transitioning completely away from physical toys anytime soon.
What the toy makers would say is that kids are always going to want to play with something tactile, and parents are always going to want to spend on things that their kids want. So they see toy demand as something that it can vary year to year, but it's always going to be present. And I would say that this year just is going to look like a little bit weaker than last year, and that their efforts this year cannot really counteract the broader industry trend, which is that consumers have a little bit less of a diet for toys this year. And their ordering is going to be a little bit lighter as a result.
And Harriet, you've been speaking to toy shops in particular. What have they said about these challenges and customer demand for toys?
There's a lot going on in the world, and people are sort of feeling that. Even toy shops that do events, like within the community, say that fewer people are turning up to those events. Another interesting thing that people have said is that demand for cuddly toys is very strong at the moment, and also things associated with mental health wellness that parents are buying kids for their toys that sort of make them feel good. And that seems to be a topic at the moment as we come out of the pandemic.
So Ben, despite some toys being popular, Hasbro and Mattel are forecasting a drop in revenues this holiday season, while Lego, the world's biggest toy maker, continues to outperform its competitors. How is that?
Well, Lego is sort of year after year the standout in the toy industry. What analysts and experts on the industry will say is that they have a really compelling offering across age groups. So there are toys that three-year-olds can play with. There are also toys that my dad can play with, for example, collector's items, those kinds of things. So one is the variation in the kind of offerings they have. Another is that they constantly are coming out with new sets. These Lego sets are based on movie and TV properties. They're also based on existing brands that kids are familiar with. So I would say that the innovation is definitely another big part of it for Lego. On the other hand, one thing that has really been proven this year by toy company sales has been the importance of these big brands to companies. Mattel, for example, with the Barbie movie, but also with one of their biggest brands, Hot Wheels, has seen really strong sales among their top sort of toy lines that are legacy products. That points to the fact that these toy companies, they have these really long-standing brands that kids are very familiar with. So on one hand, kids love the new thing, the freshest thing that's on the shelves, but they also love what they know. And there's sort of an interesting contrast in that toy companies have to balance those two interests.
That was WSJ reporters Ben Glickman and Harriet Torrey. And finally, if all this shopping talk has you excited to make some online purchases, chances are you're considering opening an incognito tab on your web browser to snag the best deals. Urban legend has it that websites see you searching repeatedly for that thing you want and dynamically raise prices as a result. Journal contributor Heidi Mitchell looked into whether going private on your browser actually fixes that.
It turns out that this is just an urban legend. There's a professor, Kevin Williams, at the Yale School of Management, and he looked at dynamic pricing at airlines. And in fact, their dynamic pricing is based on a whole host of factors, most of which are meta and most of which are based on demand.
Heidi told us there are other benefits of incognito mode. Just remember to close your browser when you're shopping. Oh, and don't think your employer isn't watching you.
If you have a computer, which we have in my home, that's just for everyone's use. And so if you're searching for stuff, especially holiday gifts or an engagement ring or something like that, and you wouldn't want the next user to open it up and then be served up all these ads based on the engagement ring you were looking up, if you don't close out that window, it still thinks you're in that session and it's still going to serve you up ads related to that search. Also, if you're using a computer that's been issued to you by your work, they can see what you're searching even if you're in incognito mode. Your internet service provider will see it. So there's a couple other good benefits, but really ultimately it does provide a false sense of anonymity.
And that's What's News for this week. Today's show was produced by Mohsin Ali. What's News is hosted by me, Kate Bullivant, standing in for Luke Vargas and Anne-Marie Fatoli. Additional support this week from Alex Osler. Our supervising producers are Sandra Kilhoff and Michael Cosmides. Aisha Al-Muslim is our development producer. Scott Salloway and Chris Sinsley are our deputy editors, and Philana Patterson is the Wall Street Journal's head of news audio. We'll be back with a new show on Monday morning. Until then, have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.